I have often shot.
We've got some free time because Jeff doesn't want to see this.
You just like the process. I'm talking about it.
Yeah. Did you think I was good this morning?
What do you mean? The only thing you were good this morning?
Eh?
The only thing.
Did you think I was good this morning?
Oh, I thought you were marvelous.
Well, say so then. Give me some encouragement.
I did, but you have published
it. I thought it was a hug.
It was.
You know you always do that.
Okay.
I did.
Okay, just a reminder, if everyone that's on the policy process steering committee, if you could come on up to the table, as well as I see Jay Scott from the working group work team. Do you want anyone else to join you up here? So anybody that's on the working group work team as well, if you want to come on up here. And if we can get the conversations that aren't related to this outside the room, that would be fantastic. Except for Stefan. I want Stefan to stay here.
You asked us to leave, I'm leaving.
I don't want you to leave. Again, if we're short on time, so I'd like to get it started in 1 minute. Again, the policy process steering committee, if you're on it, please come up here. If you're on the working group work team, please come up here. And we actually have room if you're on the PDP work team. You want to come up here, too, so we can not take a long break between those meetings. Marika, we're going to record this. Is that the plan, too? Marika, can you put up the slide of the members, or just lower it down to where you get to the members of the PPSC? Oh, I can't read that. No, I would go to the wiki. Can you go to? Is that hard to do or?
Do you want to ask Tony to come up here?
We can start the recording and just let us know. Okay. Everyone, we're just waiting for the recording to start.
The call is being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Jeff Newman, Chair of the Policy Process Steering Committee. And this is an important meeting. It's the first time in a while that we've met. 2 years? About a year, I think. We're here to actually formally receive the report of the working group work team. And for those of you that are here and want to look up at this screen at some point, they're the members of the working group work team. Or should be listed on that screen. Okay, so we have representatives from each of the stakeholder groups. Actually, this was still at a constituency time. So there's stakeholder group representatives and constituency representatives. I just want to kind of go through maybe the people that are around the table just to introduce themselves, and then we'll get started. So I'll start over here. Edmund's actually just here for observing, which is fine. You want to?
Well, Ulrich Knobens, I'm from the ISP constituency.
I'm just sitting in, David Taylor.
Tim Ruiz, Registrar Stakeholder Group.
Margie Milam, ICANN staff.
Marika Konings, ICANN staff.
J. Scott Evans, IPC.
Mike Rodenbaugh, Business Constituency.
David Maher, Registry Stakeholder Group.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone, for coming here. This is strictly a working session. Everybody's welcome to listen in and contribute. I think this first part of it until noon or so will be the steering committee. The next part we'll be talking about, starting at 12, talking about the PDP work team initial report. So that's kind of the agenda. I'm going to turn it over to Jay Scott, who's going to give us a little bit of background on the working group work team report, just kind of a status as to, you know, the process that's been undertaken till now, a little bit about the recommendations, and then we'll talk about the role of the PPSC now that we've formally received the report, and we'll look back at the charter to see how to do that. So, Jay Scott, if you want to just take a few minutes.
Sure. As you know, I guess it was May 31st, we, in accordance with ICANN guidelines, turned in our final report on a working group set of guidelines, and so it could be considered this meeting. So the GNSO improvements, of course, according to the board recommendation, asked the GNSO to adopt a working group model. So this group, I think, was established in the Mexico City meeting, the PPSC, and in that we divided into two work teams below this group, and one was for policy development process and one was for working groups, and I chaired the working group. In the past, we've used task forces that have sort of had a small legislative body where decisions were made, and it was a sort of a voting model, and we were asked to get away from that model and get to something that was more open and more inclusive and to try to use a consensus building approach. So we were tasked with develop some sort of principles or guidelines to give working groups so that they would understand the framework that they are supposed to operate under. Next slide. So here is a list of the members and their participation. I will say that while you see meetings attended, there were several people who didn't attend meetings but monitored the list and made comments electronically. They had commitments that the meeting time that was convenient for the majority was not convenient for them, but they did participate. Next slide. So let's go to our guidelines. When we initially started, we were going to develop two guidelines. One was going to be sort of for working groups, and one was sort of an outline to a chartering organization to sort of explain what you need to tell a working group to get them started. And then after some discussions, we decided to develop one document that contained both elements of that approach. We put out our first draft for public comment. We received 5 comments. Some of them were quite extensive. Then we went through a period after the public comment period closed where we went through all of the public comments, comment by comment, section by section in the draft, and we made revisions where we felt it was appropriate, and where we didn't, we explained why we didn't make any changes. And then on the 31st of May, we delivered the report to this group. Next slide. So there are some the way we set it up, we sort of set up a roles and responsibilities, like what's expected of you and who participates. And it's, again, these are guidelines. They're not mandates, because certain work teams could be 35 people or they could be 5 people. And so we sort of just gave a guideline of you could have chairs, you could have vice chairs. Here's what the advantages to that structure is. If you do, here's, you know, sort of just a, we didn't want to put a construct then that was so rigid that it couldn't be fluid and adaptable to different situations. We also put in, I spent a lot of time on norms and how you behave, only because that can be problematic in that people are seen as being obstructionists, and how do you handle that and what the process is in dealing with that. And so we put all of this in, how to deal with one another, how to make decisions, and we built in an appeals process within that, both within the working group structure itself and back to the chartering organization, because it has ultimate oversight. Next slide. You know, and then we just gave more practical advice, like, you know, what do you do at your first meetings? How do you communicate? What kind of tools do you do? We reminded them of the translation requirements, that you can request subject matter experts from staff and work with staff to obtain those kinds of resources. What your products and outputs would be and how those would be expected to be delivered. We also, each working group, we believe, should do a self-evaluation at the end of that, so that the council would have, or the chartering organization is what we refer to, because we try to make this broad enough that any group could use these guidelines, not just the GNSO. You know, to self-evaluate so that information could be used, because we've requested that the GNSO look at these annually to see if there needs to be any adaptation or revision to the guidelines based on practices or changes in what's going on in ICANN. And then we also did a charter guidelines, which sort of spoke to the chartering organization about the elements that a working group needs in order to function properly, the direction that you need to give them as a baseline. And then we gave the chairs, because chairs can be new individuals, a checklist of things that they would want to go through in order to make sure they're hitting all the proper elements to get the group started. Next slide. So it's all there for everyone to see. It's a public document. There has been some discussion that perhaps this document needs to be taken and a non-working group work team member, maybe a member of staff, but somebody needs to review it and then maybe put together a frequently asked questions document that would sort of do a high level of this. But we think it should be someone who was not involved in the process, because they would bring to it a fresh set of eyes that would bring to it answering things that we think are intuitive, that aren't necessarily intuitive to those that are reading it for the first time, and it would inform the frequently asked questions or the how to sort of guide someone through what this is meant to be in a more informative way than one of us that drafted it, because we're so married to it, we're afraid that things that we think, oh, well, that's completely obvious, might not be that obvious, and it would a fresh set of eyes to do that, and maybe do a flow chart also that would show in graphic, because there are people who understand and do things much better from reading, and there are others who graphically, especially if they're speaking another language, it might be better for them to see it in a visual format. But we, our suggestion is that that be someone outside of this group to take that.
Sorry, just a clarification, just so that people around the table, this is for any working group, regardless of whether it's part of a formal PDP or just a working group that the GNSO Council wants to establish.
The way we tried to draft it, because we had input from the ALAC, was that it would be a model or guidelines for any working group. And we tried to refer to, rather than GNSO, the only time I think we refer to GNSO is when we say they are the ones that are going to review it yearly. We tried to say chartering organization as the overseeing body and the working groups as the group that this speaks to, so that, because we know that the ALAC is using these guidelines in their draft form to inform how they do their work, and if the ASO wants to use it, they certainly can in their groups. So the whole point was to make it sort of generic so that anyone could refer to it in order to have sort of a uniform structure on how, within this group, ICANN as a whole, a working group would be perceived and understood to operate.
Yeah, Marika?
This is Marika, because a question I have on that, because I've been discussing with Ken on the document itself, because I think the idea ultimately is to actually integrate that into the GNSO Council's rules of procedure. So renumber it and make it fit with all the other elements that are being done. So I guess a question would be, I guess when it would go into that document, it would actually start referring to the GNSO Council in more specific terms, whether you would have then as well still a self-standing document that would be more neutral terms that others might use, or I'm not really sure how that those two would work together, or if you would run into issues if you start updating one and not the other. So that's something that the group might want to consider, how that would work, or that still the rules of procedure would then serve as the basis where other groups can take the relevant information from. I'm not sure.
Okay. Tim? Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, if I understand you correctly, Marika, having it as the base document, but we extract a copy for the GNSO use that we might modify and change separately. Yeah, I think I support that simply because what the GNSO does in many cases is develop policy that's basically regulating contracted parties or, regulations that affect Internet users, registrants. Other supporting organizations, the work that they do isn't necessarily that restrictive or, not necessarily regulation, so to speak. So I think we could see a divergence between the way working groups might actually operate within the GNSO versus other supporting organizations.
Because if I understood Ken correctly, I think his suggestion was indeed to take out those elements. Because, for example, the introduction, those things don't go into the rules of procedure. So to abstract basically all the different chapters that would move into the rules of procedure and renumber them according to all the other elements that are out there. And then I think he would bring back to the PPSC how that would look. And, of course, it wouldn't change any of the content that's in there. That's for the PPSC to review and decide whether anything needs to be added or changed. But basically start working on the basis that could then be voted upon by the council as being an element that needs to go into the rules of procedure, like all the other OSC elements are currently, I think, numbered in a certain way and then formatted in a certain way. So I think that was his proposal to use that in the same way for the PPSC going forward.
Okay, I'm going to go take a comment from Avery, and then after Avery, I want to go back a step to actually explain and go over what the PPSC's role is with respect to this report now that we have it, and then talk about, get back into some of the discussion that you've kind of started.
Hi, Aubrey Doria. I was a member of the working group. I'd actually like to put a comment in both about its relevance to the PDP, which was asked, and the idea of merging it in place in terms of the council's working group or working model. I'd actually like to argue for it remaining a standalone document that's included by reference in any other document. Part of what we were striving for is that as the notion of working group starts to expand across ICANN, as we start to bring in people in all working groups from a wider participant body, from a wider community than just the GNSO, that there should hopefully be some uniformity of what you could expect within a working group and how it would act, how it would behave, what the roles are, and such. So including it by reference allows it to change in one place and be seen by all. Now, in terms of the way it is included when discussing charters, one discusses that anything that is specific or special or needs to be done in a working group above and beyond those guidelines would then be included in the charter, that the charter, that the working group behavior will be based on this document. However, A, B, C, and D, conditions would be special. So in other words, a charter can always lay on top of this document by reference. So that was an intention. Those were two intentions in which were written. In terms of the PDP, it was written with that in mind. I think it tried to take sort of the maximal approach to what would be needed for a PDP, make sure the guidelines were in there, with the understanding that any charter could overlay other requirements as the individual case required. So that's sort of an argument for including it by reference, but not by slice and dice.
Yeah, I mean, we understood that just in the last year, the GNSO has had working groups, and the board has had working groups. And so we wanted to make sure that this was a document that no matter who constituted it, that they would sort of have this basic fundamental guideline so that a participant could understand that when you said the term working group, what the parameters, not rigid, but what the general parameters about a working group were and how that would be. And that's the approach we took rather than trying to make something rigid, because there's just too much fluidity and things change too fast, that if you don't have a fluid document that allows the charter to overlay on it more specifics, then you're never going to be up to date. You're always going to be one or two versions behind in your guidelines before what reality is. So that's the fluidity we wanted to offer this group, is, you know, enough guidelines that there was a general understanding for how it would work in sort of a skeletal framework, but meat could always be laid on that by charter or by practices as time develops.
So, and last question, at least for me on this, before we go to the next, what our role is, and you may have answered it with what you just said in terms of it being guidelines, but I assume that there's, in reading it, there were no recommendations to actually change any kind of bylaws or anything more formal than really, at best, maybe the rules of procedure of the council, or maybe it's a standalone document, but there's no recommendation in there that would affect a bylaw amendment, for example.
No, we don't think that that's necessary. I mean, to our understanding, it completely complies with the bylaws that they exist today. Now, should they change, that could be something. But this is just basically, we probably had one of the easier tasks while trying to put it down. We were just really codifying the general practices that have been occurring over the last 24 months. Maybe 36 months since we were just codifying the way things have actually operated and putting some common understanding around that, which took a little bit of negotiation, but not much, because basically everyone has a general understanding. This is not so much for people who participate in the process as it is for newcomers who've never participated in the process, and we're trying to get involved, that you can hand this document to a new chair or a new person on a chartering organization drafting a charter to say, here's something that you, a frame of reference for you to give you general guidelines for what is expected of you.
Okay, thank you, Jay Scott. I think the report is well received. I think we're glad that the work's done, and you all did a great job. And now, what I want to do for a few minutes is just talk about, okay, you know, so now we haven't met in a year or so as a PPSC. Now that we have this report, what is our role? So if you go, and it's kind of hard to read up there, but essentially what it says now is that our responsibility as a PPSC is to essentially to look at this report, to make sure that the sub-team has done its job, to make sure it's reviewed the public comments and has addressed all the public comments that were received. And Jay Scott has provided an explanation, and in the report it does go through the comments. It does explain why it did or did not adopt some of those comments or how they worked it in. And then our role, essentially what it says here, is that we're supposed to combine this report with the PDP work team report. Now, as we've come along, and as Jay Scott said, you know, what they've done is codify existing practice. The PDP work team is a little bit behind that. There's a lot more issues that the PDP work team has been dealing with. So the question, you know, becomes what it says in our charter, and I guess if there was a change to charter, we'd have to go back to the council. But what it says in the charter is that you combine those two reports to one, you send it to the council. So one of the things I'd like to talk about is, how the Policy Process Steering Committee views that. I mean, I think there's a lot of helpful things in the working group work team report, things that could be used right away as a guideline, the next time the council or a charting organization creates a working group. So our charter doesn't say that we can submit that alone to the council, but, you know, we could always make a recommendation to the council to change that in the charter or to just forward it up to the council to see if they would consider. So one of the things I want to ask Jay Scott is, do you think this document, absent a combination, is something that should go to the council after we've all reviewed it and made ourselves comfortable? Or do you think this actually should wait until the PDP work team's work is done and combined with that?
A couple comments. One, while it says we will combine it, it doesn't say we cannot. I mean, it says what we should do, but it doesn't say that we could send it up separately. It says we should combine it, but it doesn't say that we cannot send it up separately. So I would say we certainly could. I think that there needs to be, as quickly as possible, an understanding of what working groups are and how they operate. So the quicker we can get that up to the council for them to review and decide if it needs any tweaking or needs any changing, the better. So I would suggest that it be sent up maybe as a draft to be used in an interim until the final report. But I think some answer around this offers to newcomers, and that's who I think we're most concerned with, some sense or reference for how this process works, and I think it would be beneficial to go ahead and send it out to the council.
If I can jump in, I that makes sense to me. I think that would be fine and I'll leave it up to the PPSC to whatever you want to recommend, but I would see no problems with that.
I'll go to Tim, and then Philip.
So you see the PPSC's role in this is just being a rubber stamp on what's being produced by these work teams. Two concerns I have. One is that I think that the PPSC steering committee should be doing a more in-depth review of the working group report, the reports that are being produced by these two different teams, and discussing those as a steering committee, for concerns or issues that the steering committee might have before it goes to council. And secondly, that if we don't wait to combine these two reports, I think one could be reliant on the other. I mean, I haven't seen, I haven't really read in depth the initial report of the policy development process during committee or working team. But I'd be myself, I would like to do that before I make a judgment that we didn't need to combine these two or that there wasn't some relationship that we might need to be aware of. Was the PDP work team aware that we weren't going to wait to combine those two reports? And is there anything that they're doing that might be reliant on that? It would be what I'd be concerned about.
So, Tim, I think that's a good question. I think I wasn't trying to suggest that we be a rubber stamp. What I would like or recommend to this group is that we don't take the PPSC as another opportunity to dive into things that the working group has already addressed, you know, kind of starting from scratch. So to the extent that we, as the PPSC, feel like certain issues haven't been addressed or that, you know, there weren't enough participants or there, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, I'd rather us look at the process by which the working group work team had made its recommendations and rather not use this as an opportunity to dig into individual recommendations. I think there was a public comment period. I'm not saying we can't do that. And obviously, hopefully, would be done well enough that we have received comments on everything and can assess whether they've been addressed. It's open to this group. There's nothing in our charter that says we have to do one thing and not the other. So let me just get Jay Scott to weigh in on that, and then I'll go to, if this part's done, then I'll go to Philip.
Well, I remember our conversations on the phone in January of 2008, only because of where I had to take the calls. And we've already had this discussion, and the discussion we had at that time was our role was to review as a manager of the process is to make sure that the work team functioned as it was supposed to function, that it answered the questions it was asked to answer, and if it didn't do any of those, to send it back to the work team. Our role was mainly just to make sure that the process had operated as it was supposed to operate and really not have any substantive... if we thought something needed to revise, it was like, we feel this, go back to the work team to fix that. I think that's what we sort of agreed in our conversations that our role was necessarily. But I do believe that we agreed that we had a duty to review it, to make sure that there weren't any unanswered questions, that there weren't any things that were left, or there weren't that it didn't somehow jibe with the other work team, that there were that would leave unanswered questions or ambiguities. I think that's our role, is to make sure that all of those are answered before sending it to the council.
Yeah, this is Tim, and that's all I was suggesting, that we didn't just pass it, that we need to at least take the time to review it in that regard. But right, if we felt there was deficiencies or things weren't addressed, that would go back to the work team. That was my intent. But that we should at least take the time to review it thoroughly. I think just the discussion today raises a few questions that I have, and that's why I want to make sure that we have that understanding.
Okay, and so I know Mike just raise his hand. I'll go to Philip.
Thanks. It's Philip in his capacity as chair of the parallel group, the OSC. The questions that you're asking are ones we asked also. And the way that we took our work practice and our role, I think, is similar to what Jay Scott's just been describing. That we felt that as the OSC, we were a fresh set of eyes. Where we saw things that could simply be clarified but didn't change the intent, we made a simple change. Where there was a substantive question, we sent it back to the work team to answer until such point as we saw a report. And then we also decided that because of the nature and the length of the process, which is work team, steering committee, council, public comments, potential loop back in terms of what public comments might contribute, which could even go back as far as the work team if they're substantive, we felt it was useful that each time any element of our work was done to shove it forward, so it goes through the process, so ultimately staff can stitch it all together when they have a hole that's there. So that was simply just to let you know the way that we address some of these problems, and to leave it to your choice as to whether or not we were wise or foolish in so doing.
Thank you. Mike, you don't want to? Okay. One other question that was in the report, or not a question, but a comment that was made, that there was a reference to one of the OSC teams, and you'd put that in as a placeholder. If you could just go over what that item was, and Marika, maybe you can help to see, you know, what we need to do with that particular recommendation.
That's in relation to statement of interest and disclosure of interest. That is language, I think, that is in the process of being finalized but not completely finalized yet. So what the working group work team did is put in the placeholder there and basically noting that once that group finalizes its work, it will be updated. And that brings me back to a point of you know, whether it should be in the GNSO operating procedures or not, because one of the arguments are in discussing with Ken would be like, at the moment that information would be integrated in the GNSO process, it would just include that by reference, because all of the information would already be in another section of the GNSO operating procedure, so you would just have a reference in there to the relevant section. So, and just one last item for the discussion, and you know, I don't have a specific opinion there, but one of the other reasons I think why in Ken's view it would be good to move that, for example, in the operating procedures, is that you have a body actually responsible for updating it. One of his concerns is if you leave it a standalone document, who would be responsible at the end of the day to make sure that it's updated over time? Well, if it is part of the operating procedures and linked as well, where you have different elements that are linked, that it might be more consistent. But again, I completely see as well why you might want to have it as a standalone document, so it's easier for other bodies within ICANN to pick it up and use it in their respective context. So,
figure out a way. You think there's a way we can do both? I mean, somehow link it into that operating procedures, but leave it as the standalone to kind of address the issues that Aubrey raised?
Well, it would just require someone to make sure that once the operating procedures are updated, that document is updated as well. That's the only thing that you have in two documents, and just someone needs to make sure then that those two remain the same if it gets updated over time. That's the only thing.
I have a suggestion. I mean, you could attach it as an exhibit to the operating rules and procedures, and then just have it in the body of the document reference the latest version is attached as Exhibit A, but can be updated from time to time. So you just make that kind of clarification in the actual operating rules.
I mean, anybody that does form documents does that. I mean, it's not a crazy thing. Anybody who is in a large institution that does form documents, the fluid documents are always attached as an exhibit because they always change. And so that's probably the safest. With regards to the cross-reference, we say disclosure of interest. We say statement of interest in the document. What we don't do is we don't lay out what those entail because those are being designed by another group. And we say, we're waiting on that work to be completed to inform what that means and what that requires you to disclose.
So it's your intention to basically take that work and just plug it in?
Absolutely.
Or did you want the work team to review that at all?
No.
Okay.
We believe that there's a work team working on that. We believe that when consensus is worked in that group, that our job is to merely say that you need to do this, and whatever that group has come to consensus on, those documents need to entail or disclose, will just fit right in. We're not going to reinvent the wheel. That we think that that's a waste of time.
Okay. Is there any other questions or comments for Jay Scott? Mike?
I'm sorry, it's Mike. Can we talk about the substance of the report, or is that for another day?
Yeah, what I was going to suggest is, because of the time and because Tim hasn't and some other people may not have read the report at this point in time, what I was going to do is two things. Number one is schedule a call for a few weeks from now so people have had a time to read it, digest it, talk about the substance, look at the comments that were received, make sure that they're comfortable, that things were addressed. And the second part we need to think about, which let me ask it as a question first to Jay Scott, with respect to any, was there any decisions or discussion, I should say, on how this would transition into the existing working groups, or whether it would just be for newly created working groups, how that would all work?
I think you'll find when you review it that it is basically a codification of what's going on now. So as far as what is going on now, and I think retroactivity is always a problem. I think the best thing to do is when it's adopted is just have it going forward. I think that you get into a lot of problem in a group that we can all laughingly say it spends more time arguing about process than it does about policy. The best thing to do is just use it going forward, understanding that it's not a huge sea change from what is going on now.
Right. So in that respect, it's a little bit different than a PDP work team, which has got some pretty drastic, at least recommended changes. Okay. So the next action item then is to set up a meeting for a few weeks from now. We'll do a doodle poll. By that meeting, I'd like everybody to have read the report, come with questions. Marika wants to say something, so let me...
Yeah, I just would like to get specific. What do you mean a couple of weeks of now, so we can actually get the doodle poll out on time and make sure we can find a date? Do you mean 2 weeks after the
So I'm meeting? Thinking probably, trying to think what today is. So probably the week, whatever the week after the 4th of July is. So the 5th is a Monday. So I would say probably give it another week. Give it the start of sometime the week of the 12th.
The week of the 12th of July.
Yes. And we could do that as well. And again, please have read the report by then and come with any questions. We can obviously discuss the questions on the list before that call. But it's the hope that we don't really have to send too much back to the work group. I think once you read it, you'll find that they did address the comments they received pretty well. So... Yes, very good.
And on that note, I'm happy to circulate as well, because what went out in the end to the PPAC is the final report, but I'm happy to circulate to the list as well the document in which we actually, the work team went through all the different comments and highlighted and added comments there where they, made the changes or why they didn't make changes. So if that helps the PPAC to look at what was done with public comments, I'll post that to the list as well.
And if I can just make one overarching comment about public comments. There were a lot of public comments that wanted us to drill down and be very regulatory and set out very, very specific guidelines. And we felt that that was just a recipe for disaster because there's just too much fluidity. We used some of those specifics as examples of best practices, but you just... The document would be having to be reviewed every month if that's what you did. And so when you look at this, please understand that our idea was to give a general informative framework that had enough flexibility that it could be a living, breathing document and not something that was constantly each working group having to be gone through and seeking exceptions to make it workable for whatever the work group's job was without being in violation of some sort of process. So that's the whole point, is it's enough fluidity with a general framework without saying you absolutely have to do these things and then you find out you can't or it won't work and then you're constantly going to council trying to get a carve out just to face practical reality. So I just want to say that... Keep that in mind when you review this document. It is just a loose, fluid document that has enough structure around it with regards to appeals process and how those works and protocol and how you treat one another and obstructionism and those types of things. There's some pretty hard... that's where we got a little rigid. The rest of it we tried to leave somewhat fluid, because we wanted to give the working groups the ability to be what they're supposed to be, is open, inclusive, and adaptable.
Yeah, I think otherwise also you're going to have lawyers and other participants in the group arguing all the time about people violating the rules, and we just do not need that sort of nonsense.
On that note, on a note about lawyers, actually what I'm going to ask now is to go to the next part of the meeting, which is the PDP work team. So if I could have everybody as quickly as possible in the PDP work team come on up here to the tables. I see a few people back there. If we can start a discussion on that, and within the next couple minutes, I'd like to get that started. So if we can have people come on up here, if there's anyone back there. I see Liz back there, who's a member of the PDP work team, right? Come on up to the table. Okay. So just give a minute for James and some other people to come on up.
I'll just go right here.
So I know I saw Avery here before. Is Avery still in the room? So for those of you actually listening, maybe to this recording, we're just taking a minute here just to get some other people up to the table. Okay, I'm gonna get started again. A few other people have joined us at the table. Just to remind everyone as to where we are with the PDP work team, on May 31st, I guess it was, on the required date, we came out with our initial report after a good year or more of lots of discussions, lots of complex items, everything in the policy process from what it takes to initiate the policy process to the reviews done at the end of a process, not just reviews of the individual PDP, but reviews of the PDP as a whole. The purpose of this meeting today is not to delve into any of the substance of the report, not to discuss the items that are in there. The report is what it is. We have a workshop on Wednesday that will be going over some of the substance of the report, and what we're here today to talk about is basically the presentation we're going to give, who's going to be up there, and what types of things this group really wants to put out there. What subset of items out for public comment are ones that we are most interested in soliciting feedback live in person at this workshop. It's by no means an indication of every item that we want discussed, but certain ones where we have, for lack of a better term, punted the issue, either because there were multiple sides of the issue or just because we really didn't know necessarily where to start on it. The report, for everyone who's read it, is about 150 pages or something to that extent, with the first 20 or so pages being just our recommendations. And so what we'd like to do is we sent around about a week ago, Marika sent around a PowerPoint presentation of what we would like to go through at the workshop. I know I am the chair of this group, but I would actually like it if other people could get up there and maybe stimulate some of the discussion on some of the items that we talked about. I know, unfortunately, there are some conflicting meetings that are going on at various times during that workshop, but I do believe this topic is certainly one that should generate interest and hopefully generate interest at this stage, so that in the last meeting we were talking about the role of the PPSC, the steering committee, which oversees this sub-team, as hopefully having a much more limited role than doing in-depth analysis of each of the issues. We'd really like, as best as possible, to make sure that all the issues are addressed here in the sub team as opposed to the full steering committee. So with that said, is any questions on you know, generally what we're going to do during this next hours, or I guess 48 minutes now, is to just go over some of the slides and kind of make sure everyone's on board with these are the items we want to put out there for comment at the live session. So scrolling through the slides, I think, you know, we'll spend a couple minutes at the workshop just talking about the, you know, what our objective was, what the approach we took, and some of the goals of the sessions. Again, I'm not really going to go through the slides now. If you have any comments on them, submit it on the list. If you think we've mischaracterized anything, if you could just jump to, I'm looking on my copy here, the slides that start with the new GNSO PDP, and just go one more slide. You know, so what we'll do during the workshop is we'll talk about how we divided the work up and we into the five basic stages of the PDP. We'll talk a little bit about the rationale as to why we did that and what that really means, maybe with a little bit of discussion, you know, a minute on, you know, how the term PDP has been very confusing in ICANN world, or as Christina says, ICANN land, I guess, how it's been very confusing because we had the same term PDP to describe both the initiation of the entire process as well as the formal creation of a working group. So with that said, our goal is, and I haven't heard about the resources, our goal is to take the next slide, which you won't be able to read anything on here, but hopefully in the room that, I'm not sure where we are, in that room.
We're in the silver room, and normally there should be two screens, so we can have on one screen the slides, and one screen can have this one up. But of course, it will still, we'll have as well, Glenn has provided some printouts of the executive summary for in the meeting, so that it will be easier for people to look at this specific overview, but also to go back and forth between the different recommendations. So if we mm-hmm. talk about recommendation 19, because we can only put it up here in an abbreviated version, people hopefully have an opportunity to go to the document and, you know, quickly read through it and understand the whole context of the recommendation.
Okay. And I think one of our goals really is to try to make it as interactive as possible. What I don't necessarily want to do is go into too much detail about our recommendations or you know, this chart, other than to explain general, you know, what the colors mean and why we've divided it kind of in this way, but not to spend all of our time kind of talking without using this opportunity to get some feedback. And so I look to you guys to kind of help as to what you think the best way to do that. We have the way we've constructed the slides. If you go to the key recommendations, this slide here, actually the next one. So as for example, in stage one, the planning initiation, these are ones Marika and I kind of picked out as ones we thought would be good to introduce as topics to discuss. They relate to, for example, in stage one, talking about the time frames. You know, in the council session before the PPSC meeting, there were some discussions interesting on, it came up in the context of both vertical integration, actually, and it came up in the context of UDRP, or actually the registration abuse process report, is talking about timelines. I mean, you know, it comes up with every single PDP. So our recommendation, you know, recommendation 10 was to discuss, you know, the modification of those timelines. And so what I'd really like is for someone other than me to help take us through some of these recommendations. So I'll, if I have to appoint people, I will. But it'd be good to have other people. Maybe Avery, if she would like to present on a particular topic, not necessarily stage one, but if there's something of interest.
My this is Avery. My problem is that, and it's partially my fault, but I'm co-chairing another meeting at the same time.
For the entire time.
Well, I possibly could escape for a little bit, but I'm co-chairing another meeting at the same time.
Okay.
So, I mean, if there's a specific thing that maybe we could fit it in and I could come on over and they're close, I don't know. But So I'm not saying absolutely no, but I'm saying it might be better no.
Okay. You know, I know there's other meetings. You know, if anyone else has got an interest, I have a feeling this might fall on me, which is, I guess, okay. Not my preferred solution, or I guess Marika and I can help out. I don't know if, James, if there's a topic that you want to address, or...
Always love to help, Jeff. Unfortunately, I'm double committed for that time, so...
Yeah, this is a scheduling issue we need to kind of discuss with ICANN schedulers to see if there's something that could have been done, but...
Before going to the... That's why I said I'm partially responsible. Before going to the ICANN schedulers, I had asked and I got help from staff in moving another meeting to being in the one that puts me in conflict, because other meetings were in conflict. So it's that it happened because they were being helpful in another instance. I had no notion that I would be involved in speaking in this one. It never occurred to me, so I didn't worry about it. But before going and blaming the scheduling people, I asked them to schedule us this way, not realizing what I was doing to you.
Okay.
So it's my fault.
Marika, you have a...
Just a question to James. Is it just for you personally for the whole meeting, or does it apply to that Registrar ALEG meeting that starts actually like 1 hour after our session starts? Just to get an idea of it, all registrars won't be there. Or?
I know that just about every moment of Wednesday is already kind of spoken for last night, and this was not on the list, so I'll have to take a look and specifically tell you which event it's conflicting with.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe Stefan would like to just step up there and improvise. All right. Well, at least I'd like people's feedback on the slides, on the recommendations. If there's certain recommendations you think should be introduced, you know, I really do want as many members of the policy process, of the policy development process work team available. You know, as chair, I can certainly discuss these issues, but I certainly wasn't advocating one way or the other on any of these issues. And so to the extent that we did have our differing opinion, if there are people that could stand up there when people in the audience do make comments on these issues, that would be very helpful. You know, I could probably do an adequate job of representing both sides, but I think it would be more effective to actually have those that are advocating certain positions be there for it. So to the extent that you can come in and out, you know, it would be interesting. I think we do have a fairly big room, and it would be nice to see a bunch of people in here. What I don't want to see happen is I don't want to see interest on the subject finally appear at the time that it's presented to the council, and now, you know, we've spent a couple of years working on this and coming up with a good process. I don't think anyone on this work team really wants to see that. So, you know, so these are the items that we've picked out. I might as well spend a couple minutes just talking about those. So in the stage one, again, the planning and initiation phase, the three recommendations that we thought we'd kind of bring out of the report are the ones on modifying the time frame for the creation of the issues report. We've talked about, you know, the role of the public comment period after publications of the issues report. Right now in the bylaws, hello, Marilyn.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's good to see you. What we've talked about are... you know, the public comment period now is in the bylaws. It says that the public comment period needs to start immediately upon launching of the first public comment is not until you've actually launched the formal PDP. We talked about a comment period on the issues report as opposed to just having the issues report being kind of submitted to the council and the council to take its action. So we've talked about doing that. And we've talked about an issue that we've talked about having, but no one could really put their finger on how to work this, is kind of a fast-track process. I know, you know, Mikey's in here from the vertical integration chairing that, and really there is nothing in place for a faster-track PDP, and we've discussed this internally within our group. We haven't had consensus on whether there truly is a need for that, and if there is, then how that would work. We kind of all have in our minds some notion of an emergency, but we don't really know how to categorize that and how that wouldn't be game to try to move things that really aren't that kind of emergency into that process. I would argue, though, when we did discuss this, it was actually before the vertical integration PDP had started. I think now we may have a – it's possible we may have a test case for a faster track PDP. You know, that's certainly an issue that could be debated back and forth. So we can introduce that. So that's what Recommendation 15 was meant to address. So even if we do create some timelines as to an issues report, how can we move faster when the need or if the need should arise? Just for some of the people that just walked in, what we're talking about now are not the substance, but basically what we're going to bring out during the workshop on Wednesday. Unfortunately, there are a number of conflicting meetings with that, which some of them have a number of our members of the PDP team diverted to other areas, which is probably something that we would like to address as an overall issue within ICANN at some point. So is there anything else from the planning and initiation phase that anyone in this group thought would be kind of good to bring out in our workshop? On stage one, the planning and initiation. Okay, not seeing any other topics on that. Jumping to stage two, if Marika can put the slide forward a little bit to the next one. Right now, it's interesting, if you look at the bylaws right now, there is actually no requirement to have a charter. You know, we take it for granted now, because every working group we've created has a charter, but there is actually nothing in the bylaws in the PDP that talk about actually having one. So that's something we do want to point out and talk a little bit about, you know, what we've thought about as to the working group work team has addressed in their report some of the elements of the charter, whereas we were focusing on A, the requirement of having a charter, and B, how that charter gets approved by the council, which is, again, not something that's in the bylaws at this point in time. You know, what is the threshold that's required for the council to approve a charter? Is that the same threshold that was initiating the PDP, same threshold as initiating the process, as opposed to should it be some higher one or not? So, again, those public comment period upon initiation of the PDP, the bylaws do require a formal comment period upon initiation. We've kind of played a little bit loose with that in recent years, that we actually do the public comment period, but we've tended to do it after the working group is created so that the working group can formulate what exactly goes out for public comment, as opposed to just throwing out, you know, here's the topic, there's the issues report, you know, discuss. It just doesn't really necessarily provide the most useful feedback for the working group. So we've tried over the years, different working groups have tried different models. Some have, I think the vertical integration was kind of throwing it out there because it was so quick without really any focus, whereas other working groups have thrown out very specific questions that would really help the individual working group do its work. What we did do, which I actually need an update. I know the council actually discussed this yesterday, but I have not gotten an update, and I don't know, you know, Mike, you're kind of our liaison. But what we did is we've punted the issue of priority, right? So how many questions that came up during the work team discussions revolved around, you know, what if there are already too many PDPs? What if, you know, what if there is a timeline for proceeding to the next step of a PDP? You know, how does that correlate, or how does that relate to the GNSO's role to prioritize PDPs? So, Mike, yesterday during the discussion, is there any kind of Does it look like that process is coming towards a, or as a heater or whoever, does it look like that process is coming towards some sort of resolution in any short period of time, or is that something they could use our help with?
So unfortunately I missed the session, but I did get a download afterwards, and I think I understand where we're at in the process to answer the question anyway. The thought was, at least was Chuck's opinion, that we will need to have another discussion after the discussion that we had yesterday, but that he thought within a month or two that we would be finished with that prioritization exercise.
Okay, I think that's helpful, because that's probably about the time we'd get comments back. So if they could, and analyzing the comments that we do get. So if that actually comes to fruition, Marika's got a comment.
No, I actually have a question. Did he mean with, you know, having the whole exercise done and decided on what to do, or did just a prioritization exercise of having the list of priorities and agree on where different issues stand? Just a clarification.
The latter.
Okay, so ours is a kind of a more macro topic, right? It is, and maybe it is something that this work team should delve a little bit into, which is making recommendations to the council as to how it would go about prioritizing and how it would deal with, in an instance where there are already a large number of PDPs, or non-PDPs for that matter, going on, that how we would recommend dealing with that in the PDP guidelines, whether it's the rules of operation or bylaws. So, for example, we could follow the process, but if we follow the process in doing the issues report, in doing all the required elements beforehand, what if there are 20 PDPs now all of a sudden and the council has to deal with all of that? So to the extent we can make any recommendations or want to make any recommendations to council as to when it should vote, or even if it votes... Oh, okay, one sec. So even if it does vote, you know, what other guidance we can give? So let me go over to Marilyn.
Jeff, thanks. And my name is Marilyn Cade. I'm an individual member of the working group, and I'm just going to make a comment on what you just said, just in terms of our terminology that I think is going to have to emerge, but we're not at yet. And the reference is, with the changing role of the council, where the council manages a policy development process. I think the resource issue, so in theory, there could be 20 working groups all running at the same time. So it's not going to be a huge demand on the council, but it will be a huge demand on the community and on the staff time, right? The question of, there is of course a ongoing management role for council, but I think we might just think about that when we go forward in our work on making sure we're making those distinctions. The council still needs to make the prioritization, but it's really community-wide and community resources and staff resources, not just council, that's going to be affected by 20 PDPs at the same time.
I think, okay, let me go over to Mike.
Yeah, I think... what Marilyn says is certainly true, but I think that we got to be careful, because Olga is chairing another group that's dealing with the prioritization process, and I don't think that was necessarily part of this group's charter or mandate, or particularly even makes sense for us to deal with that.
So I guess what the way it comes up in our group, and we did actually in the initial report punt it to that prioritization exercise. The way it comes up in our group is if we set rules, for example, that says that upon X days after the issue report is received by the council, they have to decide whether or not to formally initiate the PDP. And if after X number of days after they formulate the or have a decision to go with the PDP, then they have to start the working group, and they have to do all. So everything kind of plays on this timeline, and what we're planning on doing is being much more flexible as to what that timeline is to make it more realistic. But in the end, there's still going to be rules in place that require forward-moving progress. And so I understand what you're saying, but it's not beyond the purview of this group. We need to have it flexible enough to take into consideration an ability for council to prioritize, but also at the same time make sure that when the community feels like a PDP should be done, that the community is actually or the council's responding to the community in an appropriate way. And that may all be addressed by Olga's work, and that's what we were kind of hoping when we punted it to that exercise. So that's kind of how it correlates, if we're going to set some timelines and things for the work to proceed. And so that's actually a good, you know, topic for discussion at the workshop, and I'm sure beyond. But Marilyn's absolutely right that it is, you know, one of the things this group did emphasize. It's not the council resources alone. It's the council, the community, the staff, all of them that need to be considered in moving forward, especially if we do have timelines associated with this, even if they're not the most rigid timelines. And then, so going on to the next stage, stage three, the issues that we thought we would bring out for comment and or discussion at the workshop are there was a reference to one of the topics of linking policy development with strategic plan and budgeting. This relates to the resource issue. So that is, you know, if something is going to, for example, if there's work that's going to need to be undertaken, let's say it's Who Is studies or whatever, that's going to require some budgeting allocation above and beyond what was considered in the yearly budget, that, you know, how do we deal with that? How does the whole timetable, how do we deal with that? Things, you know, other issues, you know, on implementation, right? We spent a fair amount of time talking about in working groups development of the policy, and historically there have been historically in some working groups there's been a division of we're here to determine what the policy is or should be, but then it's always in some instances it's been kind of punting to the ICANN staff or to maybe even another group, but it's punting the issue of implementation. And so we've had lots of discussions within the group as to, you know, is that really the case? Should that be the case? Should the working group actually do some of the work on implementation to the extent it can? Should the working group be soliciting the input of maybe contracted parties on, you know, is it really feasible to, once we have this policy, how would you implement it? And so that's been the subject of some of our discussions, and there are recommendations that we have in the report on that. To, you know, the last one is we've talked about there's nothing in the bylaws at this point. There are two elements of in the bylaws currently on what a working group must produce. It's an initial report and a final report. But through the years, we've certainly noticed that there are lots of other elements that don't fit into an initial report, that don't fit into a final report, but they may be issues that we want comment on. They may be issues where we want a survey to do, for example. There's lots of different elements that we've talked about within a PDP. Again, you know, pointing to vertical integration, you know, we have something that, and Margie knows this full well, we've had something that we were talking about, is this an initial report? Is this not enough for an initial report? Because if it is an initial report, at least in the bylaws now, we got to start a 20-day comment period. But if it's not an initial report, then we can't necessarily go to the next stage to a final report. So these are things that we've talked about and made some recommendations, you know, best practices, or at least guidelines on some of these topics. Going to stage four, if anyone has any comments, I'm kind of going through this quick because I know I stand in the way of lunch. And if this were in my company, people know exactly how I feel about other meetings standing in the way of lunch, and not a positive thing. So stage four, you know, we talk about – so – and actually this is something that's going to come up time and time again. The working group puts forward a report to the council, and it's got 20 recommendations, 10 recommendations, whatever it is. You know, some believe that the council should be able to pick and choose which of those recommendations and then forward those to the board. Some believe that the council's role is to forward the report as a whole to the board. So there's kind of a mix, and we need to talk about that more. Our recommendation out of this group in the initial report was that absent an indication from the working group that things must be considered together, that the council does have the right to pick and choose which recommendations. But when the working group says specifically, we don't want these to be considered independently, this is really a, to use an IRT term from a year ago, this is a tapestry of recommendations that if you pick and choose, you're going to weaken the entire thing. And so if you don't want to go with a couple recommendations, you shouldn't send it to the board, but maybe send it back to the working group to kind of resolve how you deal with that. So there have been recommendations. So that's what the initial report says. Again, it's not fixed in stone. It's kind of our recommendation that we're soliciting input on. But that has been a fairly controversial topic in a number of PDPs, going way back to things like, you know, I can certainly recall in 2006 when we did the Feb 06 PDP, it's come up with pretty much most every PDP. And there are some that are not happy when the council picks and chooses certain recommendations. And there are some that aren't happy, frankly, when the council has to forward the entire report. So I think on both sides, there's definitely good arguments. And we do have a recommendation that we've made. So it'd be good to get some feedback on that. Certainly a topic that's generated a lot of discussion in our group is the board report. Right now, what happens is the GNSO council, after they approve the, whether it's one recommendation or multiple, right now it goes to the board with the staff writing another report on top of it. So they get, so what happens is that the board right now gets a staff report, which at this point in time is never made public. So we don't even know what the staff report says. But that's piled on top of the final report, and the final report has an executive summary, and then you know, the hundreds of pages of not only the explanation as to why we get, how we got there, but all of the comments and all of the everything that's contributed. So we certainly spent a fair amount of time on discussing, you know, whether staff should basically use the executive summary and forward that directly to the board as opposed to rewriting it, and or whether, even if it is a separate document, let's say the executive summary is like our executive summary in the initial report, which is 20 pages, whether the staff should really be going back to the council or even the working group to help write that board report. After all, really, you know, the people that worked on the issue probably know that issue just as well, if not better, than the staff that were helping out. That's been a very controversial topic and one that, you know, we'd like to get feedback on. Voting thresholds. We did discuss this. You know, there, when we went to the bicameral structure, there were certain voting thresholds that were set. We had discussed, are those still relevant? Are those still the right ones? And frankly, there are additional ones where things come up, like voting on a charter, like voting on a number of different items. So are those still the right ones? And, you know, did we get it right in what in our recommendations? What does it mean for the board to act? This is also another controversial one that comes up, where it says at the end, in the current bylaws, what it says now is that if there's a supermajority, the board has to do certain things and may only send it back to the working or to the council under certain circumstances. But there's an interesting provision in the bylaws that says, but if there's a majority of the council, then the board can act. Well, what does that mean? And that's been a subject of debate. You know, so some of the contracted parties have said, or some of the contracted parties have said, okay, yeah, the board can act, but it can never be a consensus policy. So the board can act, and it could say, yeah, we endorse this, but it couldn't be binding on the contracted parties because it didn't have the supermajority. The non-contract, some of the non-contracted parties have argued, no, wait a minute, it says the board can act, so if the board acts, then it is binding on the contracted parties. So which one is it? And we've kind of discussed those items, and, you know, it's never been interpreted by us, it's never been interpreted for us by the board or the ICANN General Counsel or their staff. So, you know, this is actually... It hasn't really emerged yet in a PDP, but you can certainly imagine that if there is a PDP on a topic where that has got some resistance, but the council's able to get a majority but not supermajority, you know, you certainly will have people that don't want to implement it arguing that the board acting is not binding on those contracted parties. So we want to be prepared for that if that happens.
Marilyn. I'm sorry, I just wanted Marilyn Cade speaking. You just said that it hasn't happened before, but in fact it has happened before. You mean it just hasn't happened recently? Because we have had policy approval that we didn't have consensus policy for in a previous under the previous council when I was on the council, I believe. In one instance.
Okay, so, which one was that? Do you remember?
PDP-06.
PDP-06.
The hard-fought, we're going to override the general counsel who says we don't have the authority to do this?
Well, I'm not talking about scope now. This is on recommend. You know, after a full PDP.
I see. Okay, I think it is important to plan. My point is, I think it is important to plan for it.
Right.
But I don't think in the past, at least when we were on the council, that we stopped at that. We, while our preference may be consensus policy, that we understood that there may be instances where at least getting to a standard mm-hmm. was still a good step forward.
And I think actually that I agree with that. And I think one of the things that just came to mind, I can't remember, Marika, do we have on a slide the explanation of the in scope, what it means to be in scope? If we don't, let's put it in the appropriate stage, because I think that is actually a good discussion. Because one of the other items, as Marilyn was talking, that came to my mind is, you know, certain parties have interpreted what does it mean to be in scope to initiate a PDP. Some have said that in scope means within the picket fence. Some of us have said, no, it just means in scope of the GNSO or ICANN. And, you know, we have a recommendation on that. So, which is different than some people believe. So I think that's a good topic to bring up at the workshop. But what we're talking about here, Marilyn, is, which I don't believe has happened, is that there's a final report, and it's not an issue about scope, but it's an issue where there's a concrete recommendation that's been approved by a majority. What the bylaws say now is that if it's approved by a majority of the council, the board can, quote, act.
Yes.
But how that relates to consensus policies is something that you have differing opinions on.
Yes.
And so that's something that we discussed internally within the group, and certainly something that we want feedback on from the community. Again, standing in the way of food, which is starting to smell kind of good. and I see someone here from my company who knows how I feel about having meetings during lunch. So we in my company, we call it the Newman Rule. So if there is a meeting that goes on from the hour between 12 and 1, there must be food or I will not attend. And if I'm hungry, well, what they know is if I'm hungry, I'm not in a good mood.
Moving on.
Moving on to stage number 5. Stage 5. The topics here to discuss at the workshop include something that we've never really done, which is, you know, how do we assess the recommendations after the fact? So now it's been implemented, and, you know, the working group's done. At that point, usually the working group sends it to the council. The council does whatever they're going to do, and then the working group, assuming that it gets up to the board and there's no issues, the working group just disbands and disappears forever. We did talk about, okay, that may be not the most effective thing to do. Shouldn't the working group review the results, make sure that it's in line, or how to improve with that PDP, how to improve that individual PDP, but how to improve the PDP process. And then I'm really trying to jump ahead to some other issues that we've talked about. These are kind of what we call the overarching issues, but now we call other issues because of the term overarching is usually used now in terms of the new TLD process, and we don't want to create any confusion. So the other issues we talked about, the reason these are others is because they permeate through the entire PDP process from beginning to end. Things like timing, issues of timing, issues of translation, voting thresholds, how to make decisions, ultimately, in the end, the hardest thing to do is to try to figure out, now that we've got this new PDP recommendation, how do we transition to it? What do we do with existing PDPs? And so how does that whole thing work? So those are generally the topics to talk about at the workshop. I really would like to see most of the PDP work team members there to answer questions on this. Again, I could certainly respond to these questions, but I'm not an advocate on either side of these issues. I'm neutral in this, so I'd prefer not to bring up either side or sound like I'm advocating on one position. So to the extent I can have others from the PDP work team in the audience and I can point out certain issues I know are hot buttons. So to the extent Aubrey's there for part of the time, to the extent Marilyn's there, to the extent James is there for any part, or Mike, I could turn around and say, do you want to address this? Or I could assess what both sides have said, kind of like I've done in this meeting. With that said, any questions on the workshop? Okay, so before we close this meeting, I do want to talk about next steps. So we're going to have this workshop. The public comment period is ongoing right now. The comment period ends July 20th, 21st, somewhere around there. I do realize that there's a lot of comment periods that are ending. Not that I want to extend the public comment period, but I just have a sneaking suspicion that most people are going to be focusing on some of the items up for comment, including the draft applicant guidebook and others. So I highly anticipate asking for an extension of that time period because I do feel like this topic is important. I do believe, maybe I'll turn it to Chuck, I don't know where this topic comes out in the prioritization exercise that's going on. I know that within our own stakeholder group, this was pretty high up. Sorry, Marika.
Just to note that this is not a public comment period, that it's mandated by the bylaw, so in my view, the working group has the flexibility, or the work team has the flexibility to extend that if it feels that it would like to receive more comments, or allowing an extension to...
Because this itself is not a PDP.
No, that's why. So right. The only ones that are mandated by the bylaws. And I think normally we do run like 30 or 45-day public comment periods, but I think those have been extended in the past as well. So I don't see any issues.
So, Chuck...
The priority came out very high. I think it was the end result was a 6, I believe, out of 7.
Okay.
So it's right up there as high. Probably there's 2 that I think were highest, maybe 3 that were up in the 6-7 range, and so it's very high.
So that's good news for us, I guess, but also lends credence to the fact that probably we'll make a recommendation to extend this comment period just because. I want people to have time to focus on it, and it is a long and dense report. There are a lot of recommendations. There's a lot of esoteric kinds of recommendations and things that kind of make your head spin. So not that they're that controversial, they're just very in-depth. So probably we'll extend it. So the next step is once those comment periods have been received to then start working on those and incorporating those. There are a number of elements that are specifically in the report saying we need to work on these. So I think what we'll do with the PDP work team is give people, I'll use the couple weeks after the meeting to kind of decompress and possibly call a meeting. Again, I'd like to see something the week of the 12th to have a meeting at our normal time, with this work team to discuss some outputs of the workshop and to start working on some of the elements that we did sort of punt until a little bit later on.
Jeff, just one suggestion. This is a personal suggestion, so take it as personal.
But take it personally?
No. What I mean is it's coming from me personally. Yeah, I want to talk about the chair. I think it's intimidating for people when they see these huge reports. And so one thing that we might want to consider is making the reports more concise and including links or references to a lot of the supplemental information. because I don't know. Like I said, that's a personal view, and that may be something we want to consider in the GNSO as a whole, because there is this overwhelming amount of information that people are confronted with, and sometimes people don't need all of the background detail, but if they know where it's at, should they need it, it should be there. The reference to it should be there.
Thanks, Chuck. I think we internally debated that as well. I know, Marilyn, you have a comment? Yes, please.
I do, and my comment may also be personal, but it's going to probably disagree with not the intent, but your suggestion, and I want to explain why. I think that ICANN is increasingly relying on links, and if you travel remotely and your access is narrowband, or you live remotely and your access is narrowband, it's actually you have two problems. One is going out and finding a link and then trying to go back and forth is actually very difficult to read a document. But maybe we should be thinking about a different approach to organizing the reports, and to have a standard approach to annexes, appendices, and to have a standard for what can go into that. So then you have an executive summary, you have a main body, and we try to come up with a practice, and I don't mean to dictate it, but a practice. I find that that may, you know, that might fulfill what you're interested in, but also inspire people that they but I just find that links reliance, Chuck, very problematic.
That works fine for what I was trying to get at.
Okay, I see now, Chuck, how the problem of seeing left and right down this table. So I didn't see Alex. So Alex, do you have a comment?
And thank you very much, Jeff, and everybody. Apologies, I got here a couple minutes late. With regard to the report, whether a link, a summary, or a detailed report, my view is closer to Marilyn, where you can have a standard way of saying if you want to get a brief, like the same thing we are talking about, executive summary to all reports, you can get to somebody. But if you're on travel or you're somewhere where you can get the whole reports downloaded and you put them on your reader or your laptop and read them at your own pace, it's more convenient, so that in case you want the brief reports, that's okay. Otherwise, it becomes very hard to try and keep track of a change in a report here and there, and especially some of these that have even graphs and a lot of references, to be self-contained, as it were. So I'm inclined to go closer to what Marilyn says. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Alex. And I do agree with you. This was such a broad topic. It sounded like maybe when it was initially created, it's a new PDP. It's the topic, go with it. But as we started digging deeper and deeper into all of the individual elements, it became a much larger task. Marika?
This is Marika. Maybe a very easy solution for that is that we provide separate links to the executive summary. Because now we do provide an executive summary, but it's part of the whole document. So maybe by providing a separate document that is just the executive summary might facilitate that for people, just having the executive summary and not necessarily having to download the whole document and printing off the pages they want or don't want, David said.
And we tried not to make the executive summary too long. I know it is long, but there's a number of areas in the executive summary where it refers to just numbers as opposed to the actual topic, because we didn't want to do too much explanation. So someone reading the executive summary may not be able to follow, but I certainly understand exactly what you're all saying, and we actually talked about that for a while. Any other comments before I close it off and then let the council come back up for their 1 o'clock? No? Okay. Thank you, everyone on the PDP work team.
And for those in the room, I just want to make you aware of what's happening next. At 1 o'clock, the council will be meeting to plan our joint meeting with the CCNSO on Monday, and the meeting with the board and staff this evening at 8 o'clock. It is an open meeting, so you're welcome to stay here. If you're interested in that, feel free to do that. But I wanted you to be aware that the new GTLD discussion will start at 2 o'clock, and it will be in this room as well.
And you might invite people to have lunch.